Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of a documentary podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Catherine.
And this is the podcast where two documentary filmmakers talk about documentary films and document the documentary talking.
Exactly. Yeah, we love documentaries and love to talk about them as well.
So, Catherine, how's life?
It's good. The film industry has picked up here a bit, which is good. But as I was saying, there's not a lot of consistency and it's still a little... It feels volatile to me in a way that, as I was saying to you before this, jobs get canceled a lot. But I have hope that this fall it's going to pick up. So, yeah.
Fun.
How about you?
It's good. I'm in like a weird period where like a lot of commercial stuff that I was doing before all this, I thought it was picking back up. I had a couple jobs and then it's kind of slowed down again, it feels like. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I have a lot of interesting projects in the works. And then my documentary, Discovering Oaxaca, is kind of like getting seen a little more. It was at a online film festival in Mexico. That was pretty cool. One of my favorite like running companies like posted about the film on their blog.
I saw that because I follow that running company and I was like, oh my gosh,
yeah, that's awesome.
Josh's film.
Yeah. I love that company too. I have like four of their hats and they're just the best.
They're really cool.
So that was pretty cool. And then there's some more opportunities with that, the company that I made the film with, and for that film to get seen more and to make more films. So I feel like I'm in a transitional period right now where I have a lot of like proposals out and a lot of ideas out there and a lot of things that I know are going to happen, but I'm just kind of waiting for the go aheads. But that's, you know, the life of a filmmaker, I guess.
Yep, it's a lot of ups and downs.
Yeah, and hopefully one of those we get to finally work together on a movie.
I know. I'm really excited. Like, I don't know. I don't want to talk about the subject matter, but I've been getting in to what it's going to be about, which I think is really cool timing.
Yeah, it's awesome. So we'll keep everybody abreast of that. But right now it's a secret. But with that, what have you been watching?
I was traveling last week, so I haven't been watching a ton of stuff, unfortunately.
No, fortunately. I mean...
fortunately.
There's been so much time to watch stuff that it's kind of nice that you don't have time.
I haven't been watching as much lately, just because I've been traveling via car. But I'm really looking forward to this fall because there's a ton of stuff coming out, as usually it does in the fall. The Denver Film Festival just announced they're going to be online, so I'm hoping to get to watch a lot of stuff with that.
Nice. Yeah, so that's pretty interesting. I'm doing like a movie review show for the local radio station I do here in Omaha, that I work for in Omaha. And I just got to watch a documentary for them. I'm not going to get into it too much because I'll have a review of it on Omaha Public Radio next week. But I got to watch the new Werner Herzog documentary, Nomad. And
oh, I want to see that so badly.
Yeah, I think it takes that kind of Werner Herzog putting himself in the documentary type thing, but it does it because of the subject matter. I think it really works because it feels very personal because the film is about a friend of his, Bruce Chatwin, the adventure writer.
Yeah, that's always something I've had an issue with Herzog films is that he inserts himself a little too much. But like you're saying, I think there are certain instances where that does work.
Yeah. And I think it really...
I'm curious about this.
I think it really makes this film work because you kind of get an interesting view of Bruce Chatwin that maybe you wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Yeah.
So Nomad, good movie in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then so another one from Ade Libre, the company I made Discovering Oaxaca with, they have a little like 2.5 minute short film called Lines in the Sand that I just thought was really good. So go to audiolibre.run/lines-in-the-sand, or just go to audiolibre.com and click on their Beyond Running section, and you can find my film, but you can also find this 2.5-minute documentary that I just thought was really cool. It kind of takes the using sport, specifically running in this case, as activism, and I think that it was a really beautiful little 2.5-minute film. So definitely check it out. And then with that, let's get into today's topic. Speaking, this does kind of tie in, but first, something unrelated. At TIFF, they're premiering a new Frederick Weissman film.
Really? Oh, I haven't seen, I missed that headline.
Yeah, so.
I'll have to look that up right now.
It looks really good. It's about.
Oh, that was the one you sent me. Never mind.
Yes. I did. Yeah. So the new Frederick Weissman film about Boston City Hall, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called? Just City Hall?
I think. Let me see. You always know, though, with any of his films, it's just called City Hall, that they're going to be good. Like, you know what you're, like, you walk into it knowing what the format's going to be and how he presents his films normally, but they're still always interesting because the subject matter is always different.
Yeah, so this one is City Hall, and it's about Boston's City Hall. So it looks really interesting, like, from the trailer and everything, it actually looks like just grounds for fertile drama. even without
government
having
definitely
to
definitely does
yeah even without having to like insert himself at all, which he really doesn't. He does in the editing, but less in like the filmmaking.
So maybe this will come to the Denver Film Festival, hopefully.
Yeah, that'd be nice. So yeah, that new Frederick Weissman film, but also premiering at TIFF is the new David Byrne documentary, American Utopia, directed by Spike Lee, which leads into one of my favorite music documentaries, Stop Making Sense, by the late Jonathan Demme. I just love Talking Heads. I love David Byrne. And I'm really excited to see this new film once it kind of makes the rounds and after it premieres at TIFF. And so, yeah, so that goes into our subject that today we are talking about music films. So first we wanted to start off just talking about a few of our favorites. I just mentioned one of mine, which is Stop Making Sense by Jonathan Demme. And I'm very excited for the upcoming American Utopia by Spike Lee. And what about you, Catherine?
One of my favorites is Mistaken for Strangers. It's a documentary about the National. However, it's not a typical format of a music documentary. It's done by the lead singer's brother. He directs it. And it's sort of about his struggle with depression and feeling a bit left out because the National is composed of two sets of brothers and he's not a part of it. So he goes on tour with them and sort of documents his experience feeling left out in a way. And I liked how it intertwined the music but with sort of a more emotional storyline. And I also love their music a lot, so that was a great component too.
Yeah, one of my favorites that I want to shout out is, I don't know how to pronounce it in Icelandic, but it means at home. I think it's Hima. H-E-I-M-A. And it's a documentary with Sigur Rós. And they go on a tour around Iceland in 2006. And they play a bunch of, like, open-air concerts. So it's just, like, concerts and, like, for... It's, like, footage of them... playing for like family and friends at a coffee shop and just playing concerts in like kind of strange different places in like these landscapes in Iceland. And it's really, I feel like it's a film about the music, but it's also a film about the landscapes of Iceland. And I just think it's really beautifully done. it's been a very long time since I've seen it, and I feel like I really want to rewatch it. But the aesthetics have always stuck with me, just how beautiful the film is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds great, because, like, I know that band... Or no, we'll cut that part out. Never mind. So my second recommendation is Buena Vista Social Club. Not that surprising, because I'm a huge fan of Vin Vendors. And this one's set in Cuba, and it's just a bunch of musicians, both classical, sort of jazz-esque, with sort of that Latin style. And it's just a beautiful immersion into this sort of music, but also the culture of Cuba. And I believe the soundtrack actually won a Grammy, so it's incredible music as well.
It's been a long time since I've seen that one, but I really, really liked it.
Yeah.
So I have.
And if I remember,
keep going.
Oh, so similarly, I haven't seen it for a while, but if I remember right, I think the structure of it is done sort of like a music, like how music is composed in a way, and I liked how those forms sort of matched each other.
Yeah, music documentaries can be really interesting when they kind of like develop some kind of form. And that's what is so good about Stop Making Sense, is that concert films can generally be pretty boring because it's usually just a bunch of cameras and then the band plays the concert. And some people put on like giant shows like Taylor Swift or whatever, and they're a little more interesting. But they're still pretty generic, but Stop Making Sense, I don't know if it's, I think that they really made that concert film to be like a story. And I just really love how it's done, because it kind of starts off with David Byrne on stage by himself, and then it builds up, and then more people in the band come, and they play through more songs, and it becomes more full and more of a show, and then it kind of like, and it's really cool because it kind of keeps you interested in how it builds. And it feels like a story is being told. And I think that that's a really interesting way to do it.
Today we're talking about The King, which is a documentary about Elvis, and then Beastie Boys' Story, obviously about the Beastie Boys. So which one do you want to start with today?
Ready?
Yeah.
Now here's a little story that I got to tell about three bad brothers that you know so well. It started way back in history with that rock,
MCA,
and me,
Mike D.
Hello everyone!
Woo! What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
The Beastie Boys.
In the early 80s, everyone in our scene was in a band.
We wanted to be rappers so bad, but we were mediocre at best.
Now hit it hot, just don't stop.
Most rappers hold their rhymes in little pieces of paper, right?
We went from being famous in a 14-block radius to being on tour with Madonna and Rick Rubin.
The shows kept getting bigger and bigger.
We morphed from making fun of party bros to actually becoming those dudes.
We were burning out.
I just didn't even recognize the person that I had become at that point.
Yo, hold up. It's not over yet. Go.
There's not that many times in your life when you realize you're in a new chapter.
The Beastie Boys are back after a 6-year absence.
We changed how we wanted to be as people and friends.
We got inspired, and while experimenting, we found our voice.
Really? High five?
Yeah, it's coming back, Adam. It's coming back.
Adam Yauch was the driving force. The one that not only gets themselves going and doing great things, but says we should all do this. Yauch was that type of friend. Yauch, Mike, and I have spent more time with each other than with our own families.
It's not like all of it was easy or highlight filled, but who gets to work every day with their two best friends?
I don't know.
So Beastie Boys Story is a 2020 American documentary film directed, produced, and written by Spike Jonze, who is one of my favorite filmmakers, alongside Michael Diamond and Adam Horowitz of Beastie Boys. It follows MCA, Diamond, and Horowitz following their relationship and the Beastie Boys. It was scheduled to release in limited cinemas, followed by digital streaming on April 24th by Apple TV Plus. Obviously, the cinema release was canceled due to the pandemic, so it basically just went straight to Apple TV Plus. And, I mean, I'll start out with, I kind of had low expectations for this. Like, I love Beastie Boys. Growing up, I've always listened to them. I knew a little bit about their story, about how they kind of started out kind of making fun of like bros and stuff, and then everybody took it really seriously, and they were kind of young and snotty and whatever. And I know that over the years they kind of matured and grew up and were very conscious about political things and the environment and et cetera, et cetera. And I knew that that Adam Yaw was like a vegan and a Buddhist, and so I knew a little bit of that stuff, and I always grew up kind of loving their music, more so like the later stuff after their kind of like snotty party phase. But I was really impressed by this film personally.
Similarly, I knew like two of their their hit songs, but knew pretty much very little about their history, and I think this is a great film and portrayal of the band and their story of how they got to where they are, and a super good introduction for someone like me who knows very little. I do think, though, that could be a reason for why some people may not like it. Like, if I were a Beastie Boys fan and knew the history, I would probably find this a tad boring, just because I feel like they're such creative, energetic people, and that really didn't show as much in the filmmaking. You could see it because the way this film is structured, it's sort of like a live show. So you have Mike and Adam speaking on stage with clips in the background, and it kind of interchanges between the two. And so their personalities come out while they're on stage and speaking, but I don't think the filmmaking really does that.
Yeah, I was a little worried about the format when I first heard about it, but I thought it was actually really successful because I think Spike Jonze can kind of get away with trying different things. And I really wasn't like expecting much from the format, but I actually did feel like it was an interesting way to do it rather than just having a lot of sit down interviews with people.
Yeah.
I kind of liked hearing it directly from their mouths, and obviously like it was very scripted in a lot of ways. You know, so it feels that way, but I think that their personalities kind of made that less of a problem than it could have been. And it was like really funny in parts when they would interact with Spike Jonze while he was like controlling the lights or whatever. Yeah. And doing stuff like that. So I thought that was cool. And then also just like a lot of the footage, was really interesting. Like knowing a little bit about their past, you know, I was like, but I didn't know like all of it. Like I kind of came in and out of being a Beastie Boys fan over the years. Like I never disliked them, but I didn't, like I knew a little bit about them, but I, you know, it was kind of that era when you didn't have the internet and stuff. So I just didn't really like go that far into looking into people's, stories, you know? But it was interesting to see how the relationship broke down with like Def Jam and just hearing it directly from them, you know? And I think where the film is really, really successful is like, they kind of set up the story and you feel really like nostalgic with them for like this time and being young and a lot of that stuff. But it's really successful when they dive into talking about Adam Yaw and their friendship with him. And you really get a sense for their love for him and just how painful it was to lose him and for him to not be there. And this is like one of the few documentaries that actually like really connected with me to the point where like I actually like cried, which is like pretty rare for me to cry during a film period, but I could really feel their love for the music that they were making, their youth, their friendship with Adam, and just like the pain of having lost that, and just kind of the how fleeting and temporary everything is, which is really interesting from a standpoint of talking about Adam Yaw, who was like a Buddhist, and just how, you know, a lot of Buddhism is talking about that ephemeral kind of fleeting temporariness of life and kind of coming to peace with that and being okay with that. And I think this film kind of captured that mood. And I don't think that it could have without Spike Jonze.
Oh, I completely agree that Spike Jonze was needed for something like this because he understands music quite well.
But I do agree that at the beginning, it took a little bit for me to get in the groove. Because I was a little I was a little bit like, okay, so they're talking to each other in the crowd. And
yeah, I was very skeptical when I first started, but had a similar experience in that as it went on, I sort of bought into what they were doing. And it was the friendship and like the authenticity of them that really stood out. And I think that's like, as a band, why they've been so successful throughout all these years is they're genuine about what they're doing. They love each other and they love the music they're making. And you could really tell that from the film, which I appreciated.
Yeah, and at this time in society, it's also really interesting to see people who will get up on stage and openly admit their mistakes and the things they did that were maybe like sexist or just not very conscious of the people around them and their friendships. Like they like called themselves out on things that they did. And we we live in a society where like celebrities who get in trouble and, you know, especially white men, you know, don't want to admit their mistakes and they try to explain them away. But I feel like it was really interesting to see that they tackled those where maybe even people didn't need them to.
Well, yeah, they gave a lot of credit and took accountability for the girl, I don't remember her name, who was a part of their band when they started out. And they kind of pushed her out or forgot about her in a way because she didn't really meet the new kind of vibe they were going for. I thought that was a good, they took good accountability of that.
Yeah. And it was really interesting to hear them call out, Rick Rubin and Def Jam. Cause a lot of times like Rick Rubin, if you know anything about him, he's generally considered to be like this genius, you know? And he has done really amazing stuff like with Johnny Cash and a lot of other people. Like all Johnny Cash's like later American recordings were all Rick Rubin produced, and he obviously did a lot of that, but it was definitely interesting to get that kind of story about kind of leaving Def Jam and that kind of stuff to kind of be their own people and make the music that they really wanted to. And I think that it's really beautiful that it was still successful. You know, they had some like bumps in the road, but you know, they came back with like huge hits in the late 90s, early 2000s and stuff like that. And they got to experiment. I remember Beastie Boys were coming to Denver when I was in my mid 20s and I was supposed to go to the show. It's a long story I won't get into, but they were doing like two nights where one night they were doing all of their main songs and stuff. And then the next night was like, everybody was supposed to dress up and wear like suits and dresses and whatever. And they were doing their just instrumental music where they were just playing.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. And it was like two nights at the Fillmore. And I was really bummed because I was supposed to go to one of the nights and we were supposed to be on a guest list and some miscommunication happened and we got there and we weren't on the list and the show was sold out so we couldn't just buy tickets and it was a huge bummer. So I was really bummed I missed that, but but they were able to do things like that. And and like that last album they released, you know, they even had songs calling out Fight for Your Right to Party, you know, like, and how stupid that song was. And I always thought that it was like really interesting to that they will like criticize themselves in a society right now where most people are unwilling to apologize or criticize themselves.
Exactly.
But beyond that, I just think people should experience it for themselves. I don't have much else more to say about it.
Yeah, I think if you're a fan, I'll not go back on that. Like, so if you are a fan or not, I think it's a great film to watch. I didn't realize like how great of people they were. And a lot of musicians these days are sort of like products of the studios or products of their producers and teams. And the Beastie Boys seem to sort of have their own identity and do what they want to do, but in a sort of kinder way now.
Oh, I was going to say they like radiate kindness and
And the film, you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, the film. Yeah, and the film really does that. Because Spike Jonze being good friends with them also comes into play, because it's just like these four friends, you know, that just happen to make stuff that just happened to get really popular. And I think that they know how lucky they are. And, you know, Spike Jonze even has an interesting history with starting in like making skateboard videos and then, you know, went on to be one of the most interesting American directors, you know, doing like Being John Malkovich and Adaptation and Her and, you know, continually like pushing the boundary of narrative film, but also like coming from making skate videos, like he gets into making these documentaries and he's able to kind of capture, and obviously like he made, you know, Beastie Boys music videos. He made Sabotage and a few other Beastie Boys music videos. Cause he also, you know, came from that world too. And so it's nice to have kind of his sensibility in a film like this.
And I think it's a good example of like filmmakers staying true to what they love and film, like you said, filming their friends, and his passion is music, and you can see that in it. It's like you're not trying to be or do something that doesn't come naturally to you, you know? This seems like this is a part of who he is.
Yeah, and I think the Beastie Boys and Spike Jonze are great examples of people who probably have been pressured numerous times. And Beastie Boys definitely, with their like first album and Def Jam and stuff, being pressured to be something that they don't really feel comfortable in. And then eventually, oh man, I just saw that Bill Hader is the crazy shit voice on the cast. Bill Hader is the one that's like crazy shit.
Oh, jeez.
Anyway, sorry. But people that pushed the boundaries and were able to be kind and to make interesting things while also having that commercial success, and that it is possible. And I think that if you can kind of stay authentic and kind of be true to yourself, oftentimes like you'll be surprised by how many people can kind of relate to what you're doing.
Yeah. That's a very good point.
And I think the film Adaptation is a perfect example of that, which isn't a documentary, but if you go back and watch that, it's all about that struggle of like, how do I make art that is the art that I want to make, but also can be commercially successful? And that whole film is just about that. And I think it's a genius kind of representation of that challenge.
Yep. And that is, I think, like the biggest struggle most creatives face.
Mm-hmm. Especially, I feel like in documentary, because...
Oh, even more so.
Because a lot of, like, I don't know, like, people have a certain idea of what a documentary is. So I feel like sometimes if people are going to fund it, especially if it's, like, an issue film, that it can be scary to kind of tell them that I'm having this issue right now where I'm telling people about this documentary I want to make, and I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to do any sit-down interviews, but... I just want to kind of capture the landscapes and the people that like live on this street and et cetera, et cetera. And then people kind of are lost and like, oh, okay. Because they haven't maybe seen a film like that. They're not really in the documentary world. They're not like watching the new Brett Story film or Frederick Weissman or whatever. They're used to just watching like the you know, the documentaries that come on popular. TV. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's hard because documentaries have like a target built-in audience. So it's people who already love documentaries, and it's very rare that they kind of escape that world. And especially for like the political or socially driven ones, the people who watch that are the ones who believe in those causes. And I think very rarely do they reach people who may not agree with that. And it's a shame because I think documentaries can educate and open up worlds that people normally wouldn't see. But because, yeah, people's preconceived notions about them, they're not getting the reach they should.
Agreed.
Yep. Now, should we go to the next one?
Yeah, so now let's move on to a documentary that I think tried to do some new stuff, but some of it was very successful and some maybe not.
Oh, that's Elvis's? That's actually his Rolls Royce.
Damn straight it is.
Oh my God.
The king sat in this car.
I feel like Elvis Presley left the spirit that inspires me.
Now this is amazing.
You have no idea how hard he hit American culture.
I wonder if you could help me. I was trying to find the house that Elvis Presley lived in.
And he had no house over here.
You remember the great Chuck D line?
Elvis was a hero to most, but he never meant to me. Straight up racist, that sucker was simple and plain. Mother him and John Wayne.
You ain't never.
The thing that Elvis had was black and it was white. It's all mixed up together.
He was the voice of the country at its best and at its worst.
America is great when America does great things. Well, America's been doing a lot of bad things.
I think that the American dream was always someone's fantasy and someone else's drunken nightmare.
Oh, make us sad, make us sad.
That's where we are in America.
Where's the second act? Where's just all gone to hell?
What is wrong with America?
The world just doesn't know where America is headed.
Where does the country go from here?
Then I went to the whale.
He said, I recognize that I'm self-destructive.
I thought he only drove American cars.
I only had one trick up my sleeve. I sing it all.
If Elvis is your metaphor for America, we're about to OD.
Does she come back to me?
The King, in which filmmaker Eugene Jarecki, I believe that's how that's pronounced, takes a musical road trip across the U.S. in Elvis Presley's 1963 Rolls Royce during the 2016 presidential election. He compares Elvis's transition from country boy to the king to America's transformation into an empire. So this one I felt set out with a... No, it didn't set out. I think this one had a good idea in that using Elvis Presley to sort of tell the story of America, similarly how I think Hottest August used people's sort of stories and worries about the world to talk about the environment. But unlike that one, this one I think got very lost and didn't really have a specific format or specific direction.
Yeah, I was going to say that this one, I think the idea looked good on paper.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're trying to fit two narratives together that are so maybe... Okay, so maybe they follow similar paths in a way. But when you're really trying hard to take a original thesis and make it work...
Yep.
I feel like the two storylines get lost.
Yes.
And just like you said, I feel like this film's very disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
And I can get into a little bit of why I think that, but yeah, what were you going to say?
Yeah, I found that the stories like didn't match up very well. And because I think he set out with this narrative, he tried so hard to make it work. And at one point, I think you have to take a step back and reassess. And at one point in the film, he even says, like, what do you, he asked someone, like, what do you think I'm doing with this movie? And I think at that point, he didn't even know and had gotten kind of lost in it. And like, was it a story about Elvis? Is it a story about the transition into like Trump's America? Like, which one was it? And I think he should have picked one and let the other story sort of naturally unfold within it instead of filming sort of two films at once.
Yeah, because I can maybe see where he was going with it for sure, but I think some of the things that get lost is like, I was genuinely kind of interested in seeing Elvis's story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that there could have been a little bit of the comparing it to America thing. But I feel like when it would go back and forth, like one of those, I was like really interested in like how it unfolded. And the other one, I was kind of like, okay, I've seen this before. And it's like, I don't feel like it's a very, I mean, maybe for when the film was made, it seemed like an original critique, but I don't feel like that it had an interesting like class analysis. I don't feel like it had I feel like it was very surface level. Like it wasn't talking about America in decline in any kind of original way outside of like the mainstream narrative. And yes, I feel like the mainstream narrative like is probably pretty close, but there's so many other things at play that were not mentioned. Just as far as like a class analysis of like maybe like the late stage capitalism that we're in, or, you know, really diving into like climate change and how it's affecting like poor people. And I think also watching it like post COVID, which really put a spotlight on a lot of these issues, especially with like underemployed people. And like, I just feel like there was so much missing from this analysis of America. And then it was so distracting to go from that kind of analysis that wasn't particularly interesting or revelatory to this story about Elvis that was interesting and tragic. I just feel like they both focused on the tragedy and less about in the America. See, this is like the problem. Yeah. It's because you're trying to like put these two things in your head. And then there's like this ultra stylized like footage inside this Rolls Royce that's also so distracting.
Oh my gosh, yes.
And then all these like celebrities like appear.
That's what I wanted to make a comment on.
And it's so distracting. Yeah. There's like everything is distracting from like the main point you're trying to make that it's, I don't even know what exactly you were trying to say about America. Like, sure, America's in decline. Great. But how did we get there? What were the steps that America took to get there? How does this actually relate to like Elvis? Because I understand the general idea, but it never gets into like any kind of like detailed critique or analysis.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels like a waste of time.
It does. And I think it's very contradictory because he sort of starts critiquing the fame of Elvis and how he like did a lot of cultural appropriation of songs. They weren't his own. And that people just like kind of not blindly followed him, but it was a lot of fame. But then in the meantime, when he's talking about the decline of America, he's using celebrities instead of real people. And I think that takes away from the message he's attempting to get across. And if you're talking about the decline of America, you need to talk to real Americans and not have Dan Rather at the top of an Empire State Building, which made absolutely no sense.
It's that part like, was so annoying.
It almost felt like he phoned in these celebrity connections to up the production value so he could put it on like the billboards, like, oh, I have Dan Rather, I have Ethan Hawke. And like, as much as I think Ethan Hawke's an incredible actor and has a lot of interesting things to say, he wasn't needed in this film. Like, what does he have to do with Elvis, and what does he have to do with the decline of America?
Look, he's a famous guy that's a fan of Elvis, so...
Let's put him in. And I think what made it challenging, too, is I like the concept of driving around in Elvis's car. It's a new take on, like, telling a story. But they didn't stick to that format. They jumped between that, like, interviews in studios, interviews on the street. So you're sort of like, what style are you going for? And, like... It kept taking you out of the film every time, like, the subject matter jumped, every time the styles jumped. Like, it just wasn't very cohesive.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest problem, is it was just kind of a mess.
Yeah.
And
I think he knew it. I think he knew it at times and just sort of, like, was like, okay, I'm in it, and let me patch this together. And it's hard because it's, like, the pieces are sort of there, and I like where this film, what this film could have been, whether it was about America or whether it was about Elvis or even a combination of the two. And that's what made it hard to watch, is like, I want this to work, but it's just not working.
I would have loved to have seen a film about Elvis and his story that has mention to some of the parallels in the time that we're in, like, later on in the film. I just think that it needed a little more simplicity, because trying to weave all the pieces together, the car footage that sometimes was just people talking, sometimes people playing songs.
Yeah. Or people awing over the fact that it was Elvis's car. Like.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I don't know. I'm just very confused by the whole thing. And I found myself, like, I honestly just kept feeling just distracted.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the parts that I thought were successful were the talking about kind of Black America at the time. And I would have liked more of that and kind of really diving into it, because I feel like Chuck Berry was given mention, Little Richard was given mention, but we weren't really, like, I guess we weren't really, like, it's just a lot of things that are just touched on. I feel like the film touches on a lot of things, but it doesn't really, like, provide enough context for each of the things that it touches on.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the problem that I had with it.
Yeah.
And I really wanted to love it, because I did appreciate the ambition here.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it could have used some more simplicity.
Or maybe even comparing, like, pop culture then to pop culture now, and like how politicians have become sort of pop culture icons or are treated in that same way, versus trying to talk about education and race issues and poverty, like make a more similar parallel than trying to talk about everything that's going wrong in America right now.
Yeah, or again, like focusing on the Elvis part and then just kind of letting letting the other stuff seep in a little bit instead of going out with like, this is the mission. And I think that's the problem when you go out with like, this is the mission, and you're trying to stick to that and you don't like waver from it. I think that sometimes it can kind of actually make your film worse, because documentary inherently is a game of going out with an idea and being amenable to changing that idea. And
yeah, you need to tell the story of the people you're representing, not the story you want them to tell.
Yeah, and I think it would have been more successful if it was like, you could just tell the story of Elvis, and then this stuff about America could just seep in.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm thinking of like, you could make this film about Elvis and then at the end talk about like, give like 5 or 10 minutes to like America in decline. But don't make that the thing that you're set out with and trying to like make the questions you're asking about that.
Exactly. Yep.
And because that's where the film felt disingenuous. And that's why people that were being interviewed like called him out, and they're like, I don't even think you, like one guy just says, I don't think you know what film you're making.
Yeah. And he doesn't.
And it shows.
And also, like, why would you include that in your film?
Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah,
I don't know. Like you said, there's a lot more questions than answers in this film.
Yeah, and the funny part is that's one of the most like powerful parts of the film. And who was it? It was the guy who runs the road crew for the film crew.
Yeah.
He was just a working class guy. He's not some like famous artist or anything. He's a working class guy, you know, and he says, he calls him out right there, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that it would have been a more interesting film if like maybe he would have taken that lead. And
yeah, that would be a cool storyline of like, I don't know what's happening. Yeah, Play into that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because he put himself in the film at parts, but then he disappears again.
Yeah.
It just makes no sense. There's just so much in here. It's like you have no idea who this filmmaker is, but then he's in it a few times, but you have no context of who he is.
The celebrity thing is what bothered me the most.
Yeah.
Like similarly, why are they in here? Is it because they're his friends? Because they don't have any connection to Elvis?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, I love Ethan Hawke. I can go back and recommend another music documentary, one he did called Ethan Hawke actually directed, a music documentary called Seymour, An Introduction. And that film's beautiful. I mean, I'm a huge Ethan Hawke fan.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I was still like, okay, I'm glad I'm seeing Ethan Hawke because I like him, but I don't understand why Ethan Hawke.
He doesn't add to the point of the film.
Yeah, exactly.
And I never thought I'd say, like, I don't want Ethan Hawke in a film, but I don't want him in this one.
So I guess my take on this film is it's probably just worth skipping.
I think it's worth skipping. There's a lot of other films about the state of America that also provide like or tell it in a metaphorical way that are much better than this.
Yeah, go back and watch The Hottest August. That puts this current state of America in way better perspective.
And I think that's what made this hard watching is like having recently seen Hottest August and it doing it very successfully. Then being like, why isn't this as good as that one? Or like, it was a lot to be compared to.
Yeah, and Hottest August, like, it was so successful because it just talks to regular people.
Mm-hmm.
And you get the people, you get people that aren't in some kind of like weird bubble with all their other celebrity friends, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that celebrities don't have a place to talk and speak. They definitely do. It just didn't make sense in this context.
Yeah.
So I would say skip it and go watch Ethan Hawke's 2014 documentary, Seymour, An Introduction. It's about pianist Seymour Bernstein, who gave up performing for teaching and discusses his passion for music and his philosophies on life.
Oh, that sounds really good. I think I'm going to go watch that.
It is. And it has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, I'm seeing.
Wow.
Still, and it came out in 2014. Yeah, 2014, so.
For our next episode, we're going to talk about two films. One's an Aboriginal film called In My Blood It Runs. And the other one is the now controversial Nanuka the North. So if you want to watch those ahead of our next episode, I'd recommend that.
Yeah, and then also, I think with the next one, even though it'll be off topic, it'll kind of tie into this one. I think we should both watch Seymour, An Introduction, just to kind of make up for the king.
Yes, let's do that and then have a little talk about that.
We'll have a little like 5-minute talk about it because I don't know if I'll have much to say about it, but it's a good movie.
Yeah.
That does it for another episode of A Documentary Podcast.
Thanks for listening.
You can find us on Instagram at A Documentary Podcast.
And on our website, adocumentarypodcast.com.
Email us at adocumentarypodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what films you want us to talk about.
You can find me on Instagram at CatherineMarie_Sullivan.
You can find me on Instagram at Joshua LeBure. Go to figurepodcasts.com, find all of our shows. All right, thanks, everyone.
Thanks.